Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Today we have two guests on our show. First is Teresa Pierno, President and CEO of the National Parks Conservation Association, the leading advocate for our national parks. Our second guest will be Jerry Taylor, a climate change denier who turned into a climate activist. We will start with Teresa Pierno, President and CEO of the National Parks Conservation Association, known as the Voice of America's National Parks. The National Parks Conservation Association is an independent, nonprofit group working to protect and preserve our nation's most iconic and inspirational places for present and future generations. Teresa Pierno, welcome to All Together Now.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be part of the show.
Fantastic. Well, for our listeners who may not know, what is the National Parks Conservation Association? Who created it and why?
Well, that's a great question, and we were created almost 100 years ago. We'll be celebrating our centennial in 2019, and we were formed and after just about 3 years after the National Park Service was created. So, and it was the first director of the National Park Service, Stephen Mathers, who recognized pretty soon after the Park Service was created that they really needed somebody that was non-governmental, that was independent, and that really could help protect our national parks. And so we have played that role for almost 100 years. We are a membership organization. We have 1.3 million members and supporters from around the country. And we work very hard to make sure that these national treasures are protected for future generations. And so that, you know, brings us into many, many different issues and areas. And it's something that we work very closely at times with the Park Service. And we also work with Department of Interior and EPA and making sure that issues related to conservation, environment, and development around our national parks are addressed.
Well, you have a great organization, and I should tell our listeners, I love your group, and I am a member of your organization, so I'm a big supporter of what you're doing there. I find interesting that the organization was set up by the fellow who helped create the national parks in the first place, and that within 2 years he understood that it was critical to have an independent advocacy group that would protect and enhance the park. So it shows you how far back it goes. Just because we have the national parks, we cannot take them for granted.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, it was very wise of him to understand that so early on. And in those days, many issues related to mining and logging and activities within parks, hunting and a lot of things that were happening before the National Park Service was created, and they found it very hard to deal with it. And so things became very political. And so they were able to, you know, create us, and we were able to be that voice that was more independent.
Yes. And I know Ken Burns, who makes incredible documentaries about America, did a fabulous series on PBS about our national parks and called them the treasures of America and perhaps one of the greatest ideas of America. In your words, why should people care about our national parks?
Well, I mean, our national parks are kind of at the very core of our democracy and who we are, right, as a nation. So many people may not realize, but our national park units are everything from monuments and memorials and historic sites that represent stories, whether it's, you know, positive stories and things we're all very proud of, and things like the Statue of Liberty, or things that are like Manzanar, where it's an internment camp for the Japanese, and newer parks that represent Harriet Tubman and Birmingham and the civil rights challenges. And then some of our greatest treasures from a environmental conservation landscape, you know, the Grand Canyon and Yellowstone and Joshua Tree and places all over the country that really are treasures. And, you know, in America, we were unique for that other countries had never really done national parks and protected large swaths of land area and their treasures until, quite frankly, it was something that we did here in the United States. And then it was something that took off. And, of course, now many nations around the world have done the same to try to protect their treasures. And, you know, the fact is that when you go to a national park, it takes your breath away many times. You go to our large scale, you know, conservation areas and these wonderful landscapes. It really is a special thing that happens when you are in them. And I think that in itself is worth making sure that we protect for the future. But then the history and the stories they tell and the things that we want to make sure that we continue to teach. And that people learn so that we don't repeat some of the mistakes of the past as well.
Yeah, that's really well said. You know, the national parks really are kind of almost like living testimonies to the American story. And we've got everything from Independence Hall, where the Constitution was created and where the Revolutionary Founding Fathers met to fight and form the United States, and Ellis Island, where all the immigrants came through for many, many years. And one of my favorites is a very recent one from last year, the Bellman Paul Women's Equality National Monument, which is a house where Alice Paul lived and worked to strategize and mobilize for women's right to vote. So there's just some incredible treasures there, and I really appreciate the work you do to keep them in good shape and to keep them available and open to the American people.
Well, thank you. And, of course, we were very much involved in helping to move that forward. And I was fortunate to be at the dedication when President Obama dedicated it. And one of the things that they're finding is now that they're part of the national park system, their visitation has just doubled. And more young people are coming, students, and learning about the whole movement and how hard, quite frankly, they had to fight and what they went through in order to secure the vote. In early, you know, 1920, which it's kind of amazing when you think that it wasn't until 1920 that women could vote in this nation.
Right. Yeah, you're talking just under 100 years ago. So people forget that was a 70-year struggle for women to get the right to vote from the Seneca Falls up until the 19th Amendment was passed. So
that's
I
right.
Really appreciate you adding that on to our treasures here in the national parks. And I was also touched in your annual report, which is extremely well done, very comprehensive and very transparent about the work that you do, when a retired combat vet talked about that he had struggled with post-traumatic stress and then got his life back on track after he volunteered for a project in the Everglades and another national park. So I think there's something that really touches our heart and soul in a positive way when we connect with our national parks.
That's absolutely right. And we've been working with several vets groups, including Mission Continues, and getting, you know, vets out into the parks and working with them and then doing something we call civic voice lessons that, you know, actually helps to train them in how to advocate. And when, you know, something you care about and how do you effectively get change made and move issues forward. And it really is a great experience. And what we've gained is far more than I think what they've gained from it, because just seeing how the impact of being out in these places and then being in a position to be able to fight for them is really been a very special program, and we're really proud to be involved in that.
Yes, and talk a little bit about what the issues are that the National Parks Conservation Association works on.
Well, of course, we work on a whole host of issues, and, you know, we work primarily, first of all, on things that impact the national parks. So whether it's on their borders, many people don't realize, but in order to truly protect the park, you have to be paying attention to what is in the view shed, or that's happening right outside its borders. And sometimes massive developments. There was a huge development that was proposed just on the border of the Grand Canyon, and that was on Forest Service land. They needed permission and an easement, and they needed to be able to move forward. And we were able to halt that effort, which would have been just devastating for one of the greatest treasures in this country. We also are watching now and working to stop power lines being built right across the James River at Jamestown, a view that hasn't changed in 600 years. And this could be 40 towers directly in the view shed that are as tall as the Statue of Liberty. So that's an example of an advocacy issue that we are working to stop. And, I always tell people that if we've been successful, you're not going to see these things, right? You're not going to notice that there's a huge landfill, the largest in the world, right next to Joshua Tree, or some of the other, mining and oil and gas exploration and things like that, that even happen within park boundaries, that if they are done, they're done in a very protective way so that the actual resource is not impacted and you're not left with really a marred landscape. And so there are examples. And then also the issues related to policies that impact air and water. It's really critical that we pay attention and that we do protect our air and water, and that our national parks are within some of the most critical watersheds. And 10% of the coastal land of the United States is within the national park system. And so when we see with things like sea level rise from climate change, when we see pollution and impacts to things like the Chesapeake and the Great Waters, and, whether it's the Great Lakes or the Everglades, they all have major impacts on the national parks that are so important to those landscapes, as well as air pollution, and impacting the parks and the visitor's experience. If the air is polluted, it's very difficult to go for long hikes, and if they don't have views, it really impacts their whole experience. So we do get involved in issues that relate to air and water within the national parks, as well as developments and land use issues that can be very complicated at times. But the reality is, if we're successful, you'll never know about them because they won't be there. And I think, one picture that I love that really kind of tells the story is down in Great Smoky Mountains. We worked for years and worked with the Tennessee Valley Authority and had to challenge them to clean up the coal-fired power plants down there. And we had a lot of help from Senator Alexander, Republican senator in Congress, and he was very supportive, and we had many others that supported us. And ultimately, we were able to win that case, and Tennessee Valley Authority since then has cleaned up many of the plants, closed some of the dirtiest plants, and the view, instead of it being 9 miles, is now almost 39 miles on a clear
day.
Wow,
that's impressive.
So you actually see it and feel it, in your breathing and what you see. So we can continue to protect these places. It just takes getting involved in issues that sometimes seem a little further than inside that park, but are so critical to protecting it.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of Americans are not aware of how many national parks we have. There's a few really well-known ones like Yellowstone, but then there's lots more that are maybe less well-known and less visited. How many of the national parks have you visited, and which one is your favorite?
This is always a really tough question. Well, there are actually 417 park units, and so that includes, everything from wonderful coastal, like national recreation areas and national seashores, as well as national historic sites and battlefields and Civil War sites. So there's many, many different kinds of national park units. And some of the big natural, national parks that we think of in Alaska, like Denali, and some of those in Montana, like Glacier and Yellowstone and Grand Teton and Yosemite in California, and all these incredible parks. I haven't actually counted, but I bet I'm closing in on 200. And I have gotten to do some amazing hikes. And I have to say, it's hard to narrow it down to one because they're also special. Just a couple weeks ago, I was at Canyon de Chelly, which is a really wonderful park, and it's a unique partnership with the Navajo Nation.
and they actually, you know, help to manage it. And the superintendent is a member of the Navajo Nation and the tribe, and you've got just this amazing canyon with this incredible story that is really moving when you get the opportunity to go there. So, you know, when I'm there, that's my favorite park. But, you know, if you're asking me which one I tend to kind of keep going back, I have been to Glacier National Park several times, and it always surprises me. It's quite an amazing park, and I would always, you know, say if you want to see a bear or, you know, wildlife, it's certainly a wonderful park for that, as well as the spectacular views that you'll see, and then the amazing going to the Sun Road. But you can't really go wrong with any of our national parks. They're just all so fabulous.
Oh, that's wonderful. I guess that's kind of a question like, which one is your favorite child?
Yeah.
They're all special in their own way, as you say. But my husband and I are planning our vacation for this summer, and I would suggest to him, why don't we go visit one of the national parks? So we were just trying to figure out which one, and it's like this embarrassment of riches. They all look so wonderful. It's hard to choose.
Yeah, I mean, it really is very, very difficult. And I always try to get people to tell me, what region are you thinking about where you'd prefer? You know, because
right.
Then, you know, you can, because they really, whether it's Alaska Park, Southwest, Northern Rockies, or down in, you know, Florida and the Everglades, they're all extraordinary. And so you really, you can't go wrong.
Yes, and I love that you polled your members on which of the parks they think are the best parks. So we're not going to have time to go into that now, but I encourage our listeners to go to your website and check out the results of that poll. So if you could tell them what our website is, how they can learn more about the National Parks Conservation Association, where do they go?
They go to just www.npca.org.
Great, and it's a fabulous website, really well done, lots of good information, easy to read. So if you can't get to the parks or you're planning to go, just it's a wonderful thing to read all about them there on your website. Now, tell us a little bit, with all the work you're doing, what are some of the successes you've had recently for the national parks?
Well, I'm really pleased to say that, in fact, just in January, we were able to see a bipartisan bill for the Centennial Pass that is, you know, just wonderful to see the bipartisan support for the national parks that way. And this bill would provide additional funding for the parks to help with that, as well as something called a Centennial Challenge, so that money would be matched for park projects, and then also create an endowment to start to, in a small way, but at least start to be able to provide resources on a longer term rather than simply having to rely every year on an annual appropriation. So that was a really big success for us, because I think it was clear it was a step in the right way, and it showed the more broader bipartisan support. We also just recently had a bill introduced by Senators Portman and Senator Mark Warner, again, a Republican and Democrat, who put together and support a bill in the Senate that would help to fund the maintenance backlog, which is a huge funding backlog that the National Park Service is dealing with that, you know, is $12 billion at this point. So we're making some headway there, and we also have had Secretary Zinke say that it's his top priority to make sure that the National Park Service backlog is funded, which we think is terrific. And then, of course, in the winding down of the last year or two of the Obama administration, we have been able to have many new parks created that are critical to really protecting and telling the full story. And one of these great treasures is Stonewall in New York, that tells it's the first LGBTQ site, as well as, you mentioned, the Belmont Paul, which is, you know, the woman's equality and the story of the suffragettes. And then Harriet Tubman, as well as large parks like the Katahdin Woods and Water, which is up in Maine and was a gift from a private individual, Roxanne Quimby, who bought up all of this the land and was able to gift it to the National Park Service to enlarge the area next to Baxter State Park and provide just a wonderful resource for Maine as well as for people to come visit it. So when they go to Acadia, they can also go over now to Katahdin Woods and Water. So just a lot of really good things happening and that, you know, things we're very proud of.
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah, my daughter actually worked at Baxter State Park one summer, helping to clear the Appalachia Trail, and she just loved it out there. I must say I was a little nervous as we were driving her in. A little baby bear, black bear, went scampering across the road. I was like, oh, my God, my little girl's going to be up here with the bears. But it turned out to be fine, and she loved it up there, and it's a beautiful area. So I'm thrilled with these successes you're talking about, and I just saw in the paper recently a chart showing how much acreage was put under the national parks by different presidents, and it looked to me, if I read it correctly, that President Obama has added more land and ocean to our national parks than any other president by far. I mean, since the national parks began, is that right?
Yes, I mean, in total conservation terms, yes, and that's looking at other monuments as well that might not be part of the National Park Service, but things like Bears Ears in Utah, which was 1.3 million acres, and so he really did do a terrific job, and many other presidents as well. Pretty much every president has used the Antiquities Act for protecting important, whether it's marine parks or landscapes. And it's really, really critical that law is available because, quite frankly, if it wasn't, we wouldn't have the incredible parks that we have now. We certainly wouldn't have had the Grand Canyon. We wouldn't have had parks like Zion. And even Acadia was also initially through an Antiquities Act designation. And I have to say that we're quite concerned. The president has issued an executive order calling for a review of all of the monuments that have been established under the Antiquities Act since the 1990s. And there are many, many wonderful places that have been protected, and we really would hope that there aren't any changes and they don't do any efforts to eliminate the ability of future presidents to use the Antiquities Act to protect these treasures. I mean, it really is critical. And I will say the one thing that was very important under President Obama is there was always a lot of public process and public input, and he made it very clear that he would not use the Antiquities Act unless he did receive that kind of input as well as support. And so we worked very hard, as well as many other groups, to make sure that that support really was there before the president moved forward. So we are looking forward to making sure that that is protected, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that it is.
Yeah, that's really important, and actually that's part of what my husband and I were talking about. Will the national park survive the Trump administration? You know, I mean, calling for that review of all the lands and oceans that have been added as national parks. You know, we're concerned about keeping the areas designated national parks. We're also concerned about potential drilling and mining in the parks going up under the Trump administration. What do you say about those concerns?
I think they're all real concerns, unfortunately, and that we have been extremely engaged. In fact, we've ramped up some of our legal efforts because we realize that the stopgap that we've had in the past is not necessarily there on some of these issues, so we may have to take legal action. I do think that what we need our administration to realize, because I think Congress, for the most part, they understand that the public loves our public lands and national park. They really are theirs. It's their ownership, and they take that very seriously. And so I do believe that that ultimately the public's voice will be very strong and will be able to stop any dismantling of the Antiquities Act, but it's going to take everybody getting involved and supporting organizations like NPCA, as well as, you know, calling their local members of Congress and utilizing social media, going to town halls, and really voicing their concerns to make sure that their representatives know how important our national parks and public lands are to us, and that we don't want them destroying them. And some of the laws that are there to protect the parks are being examined. And even things like a rule that monitors and looks at oil and gas development in parks is, you know, potentially one that they now have, it's been an executive order to review it. And some of these are being asked to be reviewed and consider whether they be rescinded or changed substantially. And, you know, we know that you know, the background of these reviews is quite concerning, and who's looking at it. So it's a real battle before us, but I am confident that people will come out. People will make their voices heard. We're already seeing huge increases in people coming to our website and wanting to do more. And we have a whole list of actions and efforts that you can do if you check us out at www.mpca.org, where we can direct you.
Yes, good. And so a lot of people ask me, do people's voices really matter when it comes to changing the minds and affecting how members of Congress work? A lot of people feel if they're not major donors, if they're not lobbyists for big business, that their voices don't matter. What's your experience with how much impact citizens can have in relation to parks and politics?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think their voices do matter, and we see it all the time. And they may not feel like it because they don't see the action and result that they want every day. But over a period of time, we see it is because, quite frankly, of when, you know, people were very frustrated about the federal government shutdown a few years ago. It was their voices calling their members really upset that they couldn't get into their national parks, that the way things were happening. They made such a loud stink that I can tell you that the government now would think twice before shutting down again. So, you know, they do know this, and they do remember this. And I can tell you now more than ever, there are long lines to get in when you go to the Senate or to the House building. The town hall meetings are filled, and members are feeling the pressure. And we need to keep that pressure on, and we need to keep reminding them why it is so important that they protect these places and protect the laws that protect our air and water so that our national parks, you know, truly are clean and protected for future generations. So it does make a difference.
Fabulous. So that would be kind of the major action we want our listeners to take, would be contact your member of Congress and you're in the House and in the Senate and tell them, we want to preserve and protect our national parks.
And one other action, I would say contact the Secretary of Interior. Secretary Zinke, through the power that's been afforded him under the executive orders, he's in the process of reviewing the very core laws like the Antiquities Act and the monument designations. So call his office at 202-208-7351, and you can press 0 to leave a message. And you can go on our website, and we've posted all this information, and we would encourage everybody to, you know, follow the rule of contacting your member of Congress, contact the Secretary of Interior, and get your voice be heard in your community.
Fantastic. And so I encourage our listeners to connect online with the National Parks Conservation Association, npca.org. And that's all the time we have. Teresa Pierno, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
If you like this program, please go to iTunes and like it there. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back 1 week from today. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LaCane with All Together Now.